CliffCentral.com.
Dreaming is such a crucial part of the human experience, and it's free of charge. At least it should be. So we recently interviewed two amazing domestic workers, Langa and Mandla, and got a sense of their aspirations and their fears beyond the work that they do. So if you could choose any career to receive exposure to, right? So any career that you could explore through a mentorship program, through work shadowing, if you had to just go for a day to learn about one career, what would it be?
I only had three in mind, which also confused me that if I had the opportunity to say choose one, it would be difficult. It was catering, running my own preschool, and chefing, and like having my own restaurant.
Okay, so this is interesting to me because these things are all based on hospitality, right?
Yeah.
Which is a large part of what you do every day as a domestic worker, no? It's hospitality. So I'm curious as to whether these things came out of your experience with domestic work, or these are things you wanted to do even before you were a domestic worker.
No, it was even before I became a domestic worker. I've always had this love for doing something with my hands.
Mm. Well, what's wonderful about those three is that they can happen together.
Yeah. I mean, especially having a restaurant and catering can definitely happen together. And I think child minding is a little bit separate, but could actually be a very similar client base. And a lot of restaurants nowadays have children's areas, for instance. Mm. Which is where you could probably do a lot of marketing for your creche. So there are definitely ways in which the three can work together. So actually you're not mad, you're very you're a very linear thinker. Okay, Mandla, what are yours?
You know, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a nurse. That was my first job I wanted to do, as a nurse. Then as time goes on, I thought, if it's not nursing, I have to go in the police force.
In the police force?
Yes.
So you don't hear a woman say that every day. And
That was the...
Was this the Zimbabwean police force that you wanted to be part of?
Yes.
Were you not terrified?
No. I wasn't at the moment, at that time.
What was the climate in the country at the time? Was it peaceful?
It was peaceful. It was after we got independence.
Okay.
Yeah.
And were there a lot of female policemen?
That was the time when women were allowed to be policewomen.
Are they no longer allowed to?
I mean, before it was just a men
job. Okay.
But when we got independence, women were included as well to work as police women.
I love this.
Yeah.
What do you picture yourself doing as a policewoman?
Oh, you know, catching thugs.
I love it.
Arresting people doing bad things. Yeah, I wanted to do that.
And you would have done all of the training. You know that's a very physically demanding job.
Yes, I was looking forward to...
And very dangerous.
You know, I was still young by then, so I was looking forward to doing it.
What prevented you from becoming
a
police woman?
You're such a badass.
You know, you have to have a certain education.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so I didn't get to that point that I...
But you would have been willing to do absolutely everything you needed to do for the job.
Yeah.
Would you have carried a gun?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I would have.
Oh, Mandla, yes. I can't look at you the same.
Yeah. At that time.
This is amazing.
You know, as you grow up, you change. You change through things you have seen in life. But at that time, I would have gone in the police force.
How do you feel now about carrying a gun?
Now,
Yeah. And what's since happened to change your mind?
You know, there's a lot of things happened in my life, so... Okay. I don't want a gun near me.
Yeah?
No, I'll never.
And you would
never...
I
don't want a gun. I'll never be a policeman, a policewoman anymore.
Oh.
No. But nursing, if I've got a chance, I will.
Okay.
I will. Especially working in a hospital where there is kids.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
That's where
Yes, we know how much
I've got soft spot with K for kids, you know. Yeah. I'd love to do that.
So if the opportunity came for you, for instance, Langa, to job shadow someone that owns a restaurant, or for you, Mandla, if you could shadow a nurse, would you take it?
I'll take it. Mm. I will take it. But the other job, I would like it to be a chef.
A chef as well. So you guys can partner.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love working with
food.
Can
we get a cut of the profits? Because I feel like we facilitated.
For real?
Yeah.
3%.
Just some commission. Fred, we need money, dog.
We do.
I was going to add more that, you know, if it is kids with special needs.
All right.
Yes, that I'll do with all my heart.
But do you think you could do it on your own? So, like, at the moment, there isn't a job shadowing program for domestic workers. Do you think you could go and do that by yourself? So you're interested in being a nurse for disabled children, so you just go and do it yourself. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah.
What is it about your jobs as it stands and your current lifestyles that you feel like is holding you back from pursuing other careers?
I think it's money.
Yeah.
No, you don't have enough money to pursue whatever you want to do.
And what is it you need the money for?
Like training, you have to have money. If you are going to go for training, you have to need money.
What about scholarships?
Yeah, we haven't thought about it. I haven't thought about that.
Because I think there's actually a lot of opportunities that you guys could unlock that you perhaps haven't thought about. And that, for me, is key. So I want to understand, because not everything requires money, right? Some opportunities are freely available to people who make an effort, you know? Or, for instance, like we're talking about job shadowing. That would just be a matter of finding somebody who was willing to accommodate you for 3 weeks and show you what they do. Nah? So I think there's just a lot of things that you guys haven't thought about. I want to know why you haven't thought about them.
The problem is that if you don't know who to approach, that's the problem. You know, you have to have someone who will show you the platforms, where to start. Because you are just stuck there, you don't know where to start.
So it's the networks that you don't feel like you have access to.
Yeah, you don't know where to go, who to ask, things like that.
And I also wonder how much of it has to do with being foreign. Are there limitations by being foreign in this country?
I don't know, because I haven't tried it. So okay. I can't say that, because I haven't tried.
Is it a confidence thing to some extent? Do you think? Because I know there's certain things, I mean, I would be too afraid to do. Right? Perhaps things that I don't think are for me, or opportunities that I maybe think are bigger than me, where I'd have to really push myself, or I'd need somebody to push me.
No,
so you think it's a confidence thing?
I think it's lack of knowledge. You know, you don't know where to start.
Yeah.
That's the problem. If you have got someone like now, you say, you know, you can start here. We are ready to do that.
So do you think
we'll stand up to do that? We'll be ready to do it.
So do you think job shadowing would help with that lack of knowledge?
Yeah, it will help us.
The lack of information.
Lack of information. If you have information where you can go, what to do, where to start.
Okay, how do you feel around successful people? People who are high powered, have a lot of money and a lot of success and a lot of knowledge. Do you feel comfortable around those people? Do you feel comfortable to approach them and to ask them for help?
If I can come across them, I could ask for help.
Yeah,
I'll ask for help, because, you know, I want to be where they are as well.
Okay,
how they started.
So you wouldn't be afraid to approach.
No.
You wouldn't be afraid to approach a high-powered CEO if you happen to maybe be in the same place as them. I don't know. Maybe you were in a waiting room somewhere and you started talking to them. You wouldn't be afraid to...
Myself, I'll never be afraid. I'll just approach and ask and see if he or she is willing to help me.
That's
because
really
I need help.
Langa, as long as you have the channels to how to go through to that person.
Yeah.
But would you ever take something like a business plan, Langa, and take it to a restaurant owner and say, you have this plan for a restaurant, please just let me know how to get started. Would you do that? Would you be prepared to do that?
Because I've seen my brother, he's done that. He's got the power, but I just forgot to ask him that.
But now this restaurant thing is very interesting to me, Langa, because I also know that there are certain restaurants where you feel a bit alienated, like you feel like you're not welcome, and you don't particularly want to walk in there and even sit down and order a meal. Can we talk about that a little bit? Because I think we all have those spaces that we're afraid to go into. Right? And I can give you examples of spaces I'm afraid to go into. But why is that? Because actually, I think it's if we can figure out why that is, then you can probably start the kind of restaurant that is inclusive to everybody. So what is it about some restaurants that keeps other people out?
Yeah, because other people think they got the money. They're the only ones that can go to that place. But I think if I've got that money in my pocket, I shouldn't be afraid to go and eat there. As long as I've got the money.
But that's
I might be black, and they might be white, and they'll think less of me. But I think money is the thing that counts
to a place. So what if you have enough money for a cup of coffee at a very expensive restaurant, and you just want to go in there and see?
For that expensive coffee, my money's enough. I'd go in.
You'd go in?
Yeah.
How do you feel, Mandla, about certain spaces, restaurants in particular, and how they keep some people out? Have you ever been afraid to go into a restaurant?
The problem is that, to tell the truth, I've never ate at a restaurant.
Exactly. Oh, and that's
never.
Perfectly.
I've never.
Wow.
Except, I think, Wimpy. That's the only place I went to. I've never been in a restaurant.
And that's perfectly fine. Yeah. I think it's perfectly normal.
Yeah.
But I think it's important for us all to understand why. Because there's clearly something that is happening. Because it's not like there are guards at the door, you know, who only let people in who are yellow. It's not like...
Can I maybe attempt an answer?
Okay.
That I think I think certain restaurants sell lifestyle, whilst certain other restaurants sell convenience. So I think a Wimpy, for instance, sells convenience. And so everyone can tap into convenience, but not everyone can tap into a lifestyle.
And that's what I want to hear if this is how she feels.
I've never thought of going to eat at a restaurant. I've never thought about it. I always go past and see people. Then I always think that, you know, maybe it's people with lots of money who can eat there. Because I've never asked it to see how much it costs or anything like that.
Is it the way that it looks that makes you think you won't be able to afford what's there?
Yeah. All those things that maybe it's very expensive.
Would you like to go and eat in a restaurant?
I'd love to. If I've got the money, I'd love to. Because I always think restaurants are for people who've got money. And I don't have that extra money to go and eat at a restaurant, so I always cook my own food.
I also think going into those restaurants is the fear of people staring at you. Even if you really wanted to go in there, the first thing, people will be staring at you.
What do you think people are staring at?
Like, they look at you as like, what is she doing here?
Does she have enough money?
Yeah, does she have enough money to come by here? This thing that they think it's only them that can afford this.
But how can they tell that you don't have enough money?
They really can't tell, but because they've always had this thing in their mind that, you know, it's them that can only afford to go in that place.
Yeah.
Not knowing other people's pockets or so.
Okay. I think there is maybe an insecurity that comes with, like, if you feel like you can't afford to eat somewhere and you go in there, you almost feel like people can see through your handbag into your purse and they know exactly how much money you have or don't have, right? Well, and it's literally in your head. But you were going to say, Mandla?
Maybe just sometimes they look the way you are dressed, then they know that you don't have money.
But I think that's probably less the case. Honestly,
I think that's a big part of it.
But I'm saying, if I look at the two of them, specifically. I think that can be a big part of it. But if I look at the two of them specifically, they aren't dressed differently to anybody that would eat at a restaurant, in my opinion.
And, you know, in that restaurant, you can get a meal that is way less, maybe like, say, less than 100 rand that I can eat and that person is also eating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. So I think as people, like, in our own heads, when we know what our limitations are in our own heads, you almost feel like people can see through you. I feel like that all the time. I have certain insecurities, and when I mention them to people, they're like, what are you talking about? You know, like, we would have never thought that about you. But I immediately think that I'm exposed because in my own head, I have limited myself to certain things.
Mm-hmm. I want to give an example. I went to some restaurant in Four Ways with these people. Yeah, so we were eating, but when I checked the bill, I thought that was more than 100 and something. I think it totaled up to 134. I thought it was something like 300. For that plate of food.
Yeah, so it's also just because I think, yeah, it's assuming based on the way that something looks, you assume how much it costs.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that can be very misleading. Or because of the people who are in a space that, you know, so it's these, because I think there are many restaurants in which everybody could probably afford something. Not everyone, but a lot more people than we think. You know, so I think it's about, like, first of all, being vocal about these things, but also then trying to address some of these misconceptions. And I'm happy about this conversation, like I said, Langa, because if you're going to start a restaurant, it's something you can think about. Like, what is my restaurant and the way that it looks? What is it? What message is it sending about whether or not people are welcome?
And I think we shouldn't make a person feel that they can't eat in there. I think it's also within us that we tell ourselves that, I don't eat there, I don't have the money. Mm. That thing in us, if I had to open, I think I would try. I don't know how I'll put it, but to make people out there, when they come to the door, they mustn't be afraid to go in, to say, I don't have that money. Rich people eat here or something like that.
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely. I think that would be a great thing to do.
No, but I mean, the thing is, like, for me, Santon, the first time I got there, I was completely overwhelmed. Although there's some very average places there as well. But by virtue of all that it's loaded with, which is Santon, wealth, all that stuff, I didn't feel welcome at all.
Yeah. You know? But I think there are external factors that come into it. But I think largely it's a voice that we have in our head because we know what something is loaded with, where we hold ourselves back. I think that's probably the bigger thing that I've noticed. So my family's always dined. We've always loved dining as a family pastime. But, you know, still today, and I think less so once we get over ourselves, people are adapting more and more, particularly like in the middle class. It is becoming more about maybe classism and how much money you have and less about the color of your skin, maybe. More and more. I'm not saying it's completely that way, but I'm saying more and more. But I used to walk into restaurants with my family and literally we would just feel like all the white people were looking at us and all the white people were uncomfortable. You know, and we wouldn't feel comfortable unless we spotted another black family or two or three, right? When actually, perhaps there were one or two, but for the most part, I'm sure those people were just trying to have their dinner. And that's something I've found has gone away slowly but surely, psychologically, as we have started to get out of our own heads and go to spaces just to do what we came to do. I think it is a bit of both. I think there's a lot more we can do with spaces to make them more accommodating and to unload them. But I think half the job is on us to once a space then is unloaded, to unload ourselves.
Okay, so you want to start a restaurant and you want to be a nurse, but if you needed that money, so you've decided that this is what you're going to do, right? But if you needed money to start that, or if you needed money, Mandla, to become a nurse, where would you get the capital to fund your dream or your vision?
That's why we are stuck. We don't know where we can go.
Mm.
We don't know where to start.
When it comes to getting loans or... we were speaking the other day about microloans, that sort of stuff. Would you ever go there? Would you have any family members that would invest in your vision?
Microloans are a bit a problem because they have so much interest and you really get yourself into the deep, deep trouble. Maybe you just first look around, talk to some family member that maybe is doing well, get a certain amount, maybe move to a next person or friend as well, get to a certain target, depending on how much you're going to need. That'll be much better so that you can repay them back. Maybe it won't have interest.
The interest will be so huge that you end up paying double the money you have borrowed.
So you guys are afraid of debt, eh?
Yes, we are.
They'll come at times to collect some things from you if you don't have it.
Are there any jobs that you think are for people of color? Like maybe exclusively for people of color that you can't imagine a white person doing?
Yeah, because everything in South Africa seems to have a race, right?
That's true. Because I don't think you can ever find... I've never seen a domestic worker.
A white domestic worker.
But maybe a childminder. A few, but doing domestic work or a white being a cleaner.
Yeah.
I haven't seen. Maybe a colored, yes.
Now, do you think that's because white people are privileged or do you think it's because they feel like those jobs are for people of color?
Yeah, they think those jobs are for people of color.
They don't because, see themselves doing
that. Yeah, because you will see, you hear sometimes saying, oh yeah, you don't want to go to school. You are going to end up being a gardener or a housekeeper, which is the lowest job in the world. You see?
But I've seen whites at restaurants.
Yes, restaurants.
Waiters and waitresses. Yeah. And I've seen, I don't know whether that is colored or Indian, of the low, not the wealthy, but in it's like spa or some supermarket, not Cambridge, but spa, Pick and Pay. Yeah,
are there any jobs, higher income jobs that you think are not for people of color?
No.
A job is a job.
A job is a job.
Okay.
Shouldn't be that job is for white or black. As long as I think, if like, for instance, if you say to become a CEO, if they would say only whites, what about those educated blacks that are for that position? Where do they go?
But you know, part of what I think a lot of professional people of color are struggling with is BEE and the perception that comes with BEE. So often if you climb up the corporate ladder, then they'll think that you might have done it not because you're capable and skilled, but because BEE is putting you in that position. You know, so I think, well, actually the question is, do you think that as a society we still perceive that some people don't deserve some roles in the workplace?
It does happen.
Yeah,
like in Cape Town, I believe that most jobs, mostly in even in banks, so it's mostly colored. I don't know, because maybe Cape Town has got a lot of colored people and closer people, but most jobs are given to the colored compared to the blacks. The blacks are struggling. There's like a competition.
Do you think that sometimes, you know, as Bali was talking about how sometimes we can limit ourselves, do you think that sometimes we might think that we don't deserve to be in a job because we're not used to seeing people that look like us in those jobs? So do you think sometimes we might not apply because we think, but, you know, there aren't many like me there?
I think people well educated, I don't think that they will think anything like that. Maybe they'll apply and then being turned down. because of color.
Because I remember the first time one of my colleagues applied to study at an international school was the first time I realized I could do it too. Before that, I had no idea I could do that. I just thought, okay, I'm just going to study here in South Africa, then I'm just going to go and do my job. And the moment she did that was the moment I realized that that's not limited to me. And by me not applying is the only time I'm limited. So I realized that that was something that I did to myself. So do you think that maybe, you know, some people might not apply to things because it just doesn't cross their mind because they're just not used to being exposed to that as a potential for them to have?
It does happen.
I think we also have a lot of false perceptions about certain types of jobs and how happy people are in them. And so, for instance, like the corporate world and the business world, right? It comes with its own drawbacks and its own stresses and disadvantages. And so I want to know from you, I mean, and perhaps you've observed in the families that you've worked with, where your employers have had their careers, where they work in an office or behind a laptop most of the time. I want to know from you, is there anything that you think you would hate about working in an office and a formal environment where you had to wear high heels and a black suit and carry a laptop and a briefcase?
Yeah, I think sometimes it gets too serious about what you have to, how you have to get dressed, how you dress yourself, and the stresses which goes with that, those corporate high jobs. You find that people come home, they don't know what to do. They are so stressed up that you end up sometimes getting sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see that with the households that you look after? That those that work in offices have high levels of stress?
They come home tired. Oh, I'm so tired.
And what can that lead to? What some of the problems you've seen? Work-related problems where you can
sometimes see. Sometimes if the stress at work, they'll take off that stress towards their workers. You find that someone is not happy all the time. See, whatever you do, try to make things good, or what, you are always wrong because they are so stressed up with something at work. Mm. It's not about you, it's about their work.
The first sign is when they come inside, that was a greeting. That's where you see that there's something wrong. Mm. Either you're happy, you first approach them with a greeting, or it's either they don't even say a greeting to you. Mm. That's where you see them. Mm.
Would you want to work in an office? Either of you?
I don't want to work in an office.
I'm glad that you have declared that.
I don't. I just want to work taking care of children with special needs or working as a chef dealing with food. That's the only things I want to do. I've never worked in an office, but when I look at what some people I'm close to are working in offices, I can, from what they are saying, things that, you know, lots of work, and sometimes there is like bad situation of food between them working with, like, in an office, maybe there'll be six or seven, like, there are things happening there. I don't want to be in a situation like that.
Yeah. And you guys, I mean, have gotten so used to working on your own, right?
Yes.
And in some way, I mean, even though you have a boss, when your boss is gone, you're kind of your own boss, you know, and you decide when to do what you want to do and you decide how to do it, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So that is...
That's the privilege we have. Mm-hmm. You're working all by yourself. You don't have anyone nagging or giving you a cold shoulder.
I'm glad you recognize it is a privilege. Yeah. Because some people have their bosses sit here on their necks constantly, all day, every day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Langa, would you want to work in an office?
I wouldn't mind, besides the dressing, because I'm not a person of high. Like, if I have to wear them every day, that would be the disadvantage for me. But
could you work on a computer all day?
That's just coming to that. Sitting there the whole day would be something. I think there would be a lot of pressure for me.
And the other thing of working in office, you have to have makeup, things like that. I don't like makeup. Mm. No. I want to be plain as I am.
How about politics? Would you get into politics?
No.
Never. Mm-mm. But I want to know from you guys, if you had to choose a ministry, what it would be. If you had to be a minister of something, come on.
Minister of Health.
Minister of Health, okay. Lange?
You're consistent, Mandla.
She's very consistent.
I think I'll be a minister of education.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, but otherwise you wouldn't want to go into politics, eh? Why?
I don't like politics.
Do you think it's useful?
It's not. Why? There's too much arguing and nothing gets done. Honestly, in politics, it's always arguing, nothing gets done. It's always fighting all the way.
Waste of time.
I've never seen anything.
I almost feel like if you took the politics out of politics,
yeah,
then, you know, then we might be more productive. Yeah, because I think it's the politics that gets in the way of politics. I think government is incredibly important, which I suppose is a byproduct or a component of politics. But it's the politicking that you're talking about, the constant arguing and arguing and arguing and not getting...
Nothing getting out of it.
Politics is almost the opposite of productivity, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you've raised a very interesting point there.
And there's, at the end, politics, there's so much killings after that. Have you noticed? I don't know if in politics there's killings after that.
So it's politics that then turns into fighting and violence.
I don't know if people have said to realize it, but when I listen to news and watch politic things, there's always after that politics there must be somebody hurt or killed.
It's so true.
In this country as well.
Yeah.
I mean
mostly watching the news. I watch news.
I mean, war comes out of politics, for instance, and it's also
and in other it's African not
that you know
countries.
What the funny thing is, it's not the politicians fighting and killing each other. It's everybody else fighting and killing each other over what the politicians are arguing about. So it's not even the people who are part of the politics, it's just people become a casualty of politics. It's crazy.
I think because the people don't have anyone or anything to protect them from. Because you might find that the people out there don't get, like, maybe there'll be a rally, there'll be in crowds like that, and they're moving in public transport or they get followed by. So I think that the politicians get protection because they always have police or something guarding them.
Sure.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So it means that, you know, as you talk about casualties, so sometimes those casualties are symbolic, you know, towards the ones that are protected, because you can't.
So the anger is towards the politician, but they have a proxy, they have a human shield, because no one can get to them. Mm-hmm. So people end up venting frustration over politicians, government, among one another, because, you know, you can't access the office of the presidency or the ministry.
So Amanda, if you wanted to,
you guys are so smart.
If you wanted to affect the health industry, so you want to be a health minister, but you don't want to do it through politics. What is the other way then that you would do it? If you were to make a huge change in the health industry, how would you start to tackle it? Because I guess I wonder if the answer is not through politics, then what is it through? So, okay, I can use an example of us, you know, like we're sort of, I don't know, I don't believe that the government is ever going to treat domestic workers well, you know, so we just coming at it from another angle for the payment to be better, for, you know, uniforms to be better, for sponsorships and bursaries to actually be in place. You know what I mean? But we're not doing it through politics and we're not doing it through government. So where would you go at it with health?
The problem is that when you become Minister of Health, you have to be in politics for the government to help you, because you can't be all by yourself out there,
so
except if you ask for sponsorship from non-governmental organizations.
So you wouldn't be able to do it as the Minister of Health, is what you're saying, because that is an inherently political...
Yeah, I don't think you can do it all by yourself, because it's a huge thing.
Have you ever thought of any mentor in your mind, like someone that you'd love to meet to guide you through a career choice? Have you ever had that?
No. I've never thought about it, but maybe now I'll think about lots of things, because it's like you guys, you've opened our minds.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's important to have a mentor in mind?
I think so.
I think
to
it
help
does.
Yeah, it does. With things you're stuck in.
Yeah. It helps a lot, because to me, I can say it helps a lot, because like you too, you are like our mentors, because you have opened our minds.
No.
Yes. Yes. You know what? To tell you something, before, I didn't have this much confidence.
Wow.
But now I've got a lot of confidence. Even if I stand in front of other women, I can address them with confidence. But before, it was, I used to do it, but it was difficult. But now I feel like I can say anything I want.
I think we have very little to do with it, though. I think it's really more how much you have committed to your own personal development since we met you. I think maybe we helped to ask the right questions, but I think that all of that power is most certainly coming from you. Mm-hmm. I have no business mentoring anyone at all.
You have. You don't realize it. You have a lot.
And we can even refer people to you. People.
Yes, you have. No. You don't realize it, and you don't notice that how much strength you have to mentor other people, because I'm telling the truth. I wasn't a person like you. I'll stand in front of people and say a lot of things like I say now. Now I can stand in front of people and talk to people and see people clapping hands like this, which never happened before, because I'll stand up and say 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4 and sit down. Yeah.
Oh, actually,
I don't know how to receive that.
I'm literally in tears right now.
Tilly's about to cry.
That's the truth.
You guys gave us courage.
Yes.
That we wouldn't have in a way.
Yeah.
It's so crazy because, I mean, I see Mbali and I sort of go in and out of confidence, and we are still fighting with ourselves as we grow into ourselves.
I will say this.
It's incredible.
You have given me more drive than I've ever had in my entire life, and more courage.
Yeah.
Because you are worth it. Right? I'm always the kind of person who needs a good cause. I need somebody to fight for, or something to fight for, to really, really push me. And, you know, even just the two of you in this room alone have given me that. And it's a really great gift, because I think that I become more and more and better every day, because I want to step up for you.
So interesting, because we wanted to discuss your aspirations, but it looks like we're discovering our own.
And with that, I think we should kill it, because
it's getting soppy.
This is not my thing.
Yeah. But
thank you so much, guys. No, really, very well received, and thank you to you for a beautiful discussion as always. And we look forward to many, many more. Thank you for joining us on the main sessions with Cliff Central. Sorry, we got a bit soppy over there. But we'll catch you later. Tools, Twitter?
At Made Project, MAIDE Project, every Thursdays at 6. We look so forward to seeing your visions and realities come to life. Ladies, thank you.
Peace. CliffCentral.com